Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday holiday. It's President's Day. We've got 6 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly cloudy skies right now. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Devin Lucy. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Really, what we got to get past is the cold. That's the big thing. Now, besides that, we've got a little chance of some snow at times, kind of over the weekend. If you found it at times, maybe we put down an inch or two out of some lighter than snow events. If it does linger and last a little bit longer, I would expect that more Wednesday to Thursday. So today, maybe we'll put down another inch or two to get it squeezed out if at some points with some snow showers. As we get through this morning, you got the mostly cloudy start to the day and hold on at least partly to mostly cloudy skies for a better part. And again, that slight chance of snow showers, but only topping out around 20 here today. It gets even colder. We're finding temperatures starting off below zero, anywhere from around 3 to 7 below zero. Tomorrow morning, Tuesday into Wednesday morning, top temperatures upper teens to near 20 on Tuesday into Wednesday. Wednesday to Thursday comes that next likelier chance of some light snow, and by then we could squeeze out maybe up to about 1 to 3 inches of snow for both Wednesday and to Thursday. It's just not a whole lot coming down, and not snowfall that creates big problems, as we know we can get through quite a bit up in Park City. Another break into Friday, partly to mostly cloudy skies, starts off 0 to 5 degrees in the morning, tops out lower to mid-20s. Then over the weekend, some light lingering snow showers on the order of maybe an inch or two. Partly cloudy to mostly cloudy skies, top temperatures topping out into about the mid-20s both days. So really, it's about the cold here for the time of the year. We're well under average highs, and we're going to find those coldest days to be there Tuesday into Wednesday morning as we start off again well below zero. Look to be the next likeliest round of some light snow again to more Wednesday to Thursday at this point, but really no big amounts to be coming through. Active weather pattern from these storm systems rolling in one after another, kind of northwest, south, and east, keeps driving in this cold. Really doesn't bring in a whole lot of snow I'm not seeing anytime soon. So after it's been very, very active, we continue to be very active, but these systems, not really these big Pacific storms and moisture producers that we've had in the past several weeks. If you didn't hear it, El Nino officially went into effect. Now what you have to have, the water temperatures off the coast of South America that we detect as being that El Nino phenomena, that it has to go on for 3 months. It's been going on. It's happened for 3 months. So now they say officially we're in an El Nino. But what that points out is our very active weather pattern that has occurred. Thank you, El Nino. That's your ABC for Utah pinpoint forecast.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Devin. KPCW News time now, 8:08. And with a look in the backcountry from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, we have Trent. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Over the weekend, we had a number of avalanches triggered. And actually, just around the corner there in Guardsman's Pass, we had a skier hit like a jump. And when he landed into the slope, it avalanched 2 to 3 feet deep and about 200 feet wide. And the skier was taken down the slope and he was fully buried, everything but just a ski tip sticking out. They were able to dig him out okay, no injuries, and he was, not harmed. So that's really good news. And that just brings us to a really great point that, if you are going to travel in the backcountry, beak and shovel probes, I mean, that is just the three minimum pieces of gear that you need at all times. And we're seeing a number of other avalanches that are being triggered. There was another one there just sort of by the Park City Ridgeline. It was 1 to 3 feet deep and about 300 feet wide. That was also skier triggered. And most of these avalanches are happening within the new snow. So basically the winds have whipped up the new snow into what we call wind slab avalanches or wind drifted snow. And that's really our main concern out there. And, these wind slabs and drifts are just scattered through the terrain. So it's hard to just say, this slope is good and this one's bad. It's really just everything. There's a chance of that windblown snow around all aspects and elevations. And I'm pretty sure everybody remembers how windy it's been. Now the winds have turned off. We have beautiful powder snow out there on the surface. There is really great skiing and riding to be had. Then our next issue is the cornices have grown large. So the cornices are those huge overhanging pieces of snow that are up on the ridgeline. So if anybody's getting out and walking a ridgeline or trying to get up high and, get on a peak, you really have to stay far back from those edges right now with how big those cornices are. So Our bottom line danger is we have a moderate danger, and that exists on heavily wind-loaded slopes at the mid and upper elevation. And the danger is most pronounced on the upper elevation north through east-facing terrain. And again, as I mentioned, those cornices, are definitely an issue, and you need to exercise great caution along the ridges up there.
Okay. Hey, Trent, thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:12. And taking a look at the area resorts reporting 2 inches of new snow. Park City scheduled to open with 41 chairlifts, 328 runs open, 124 of those groomed overnight, including Home Run and Another World. Deer Valley reporting again also 2 inches of new, 21 lifts, 103 runs, 62 of those runs groomed overnight, hit the 60 mark. And White Pine Touring has got all 20 kilometers of track groomed, the 3K, the 5K, as well as the farm. Lou saying that snow pretty hard and firm this morning. You may want to give it a little bit to get out there and skate skiing, but the classic track's in good shape. It's 8:13. Well, stay tuned in just a minute. We'll be checking in with KPCW reporter Emily Means with our weekly legislative update. Director of Park City Film, Katie Wang, in with details on Saturday's Oscar Party fundraiser. Tom Webb from U.S. Ski and Snowboard will be calling in with a team update. And finally, Brian Hanton with Basin Rec will be in with a monthly update and an update on Rob's Trail. First, the Utah legislature taking the day off to celebrate President's Day, but still a lot to get through with just less than a month until the end of the 45-day Utah legislative session. On the phone with us with an update is KPCW reporter Emily Means. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with the bill last week that is very familiar to Park City residents, the plastic bag ban. It's basically a ban on the ban that Park City had put into effect at its three large grocery stores. People aren't happy about this. Like, lawmakers, I guess, aren't happy about it. We seem to be okay with it here in town.
Right. So this is House Bill 320. It's called the Container Regulation Act. And this is the same bill that came up at last year's legislative session. It would prohibit local governments, so that's city and county governments, from banning the use of a whole bunch of different types of containers, including cups and, of course, bags. And there are also a bunch of different varieties of materials included in the bill. And for us, you know, for Park City, we might be interested in the plastic part of this. So it's sponsored by Representative Mike McKell. He's a Republican from Spanish Fork. And last week at his weekly legislative update, Park City Assistant City Manager Matt Dias mentioned that there are a lot of plastic manufacturing jobs in McKell's district. So you can understand why Representative McKell might be interested in this bill. And like you said, you know, Park City is okay with banning the use of plastic grocery bags, and they did that in 2017. But since then, Moab has also banned the use of plastic bags, and Logan City is voting on the same thing this March. So I talked with Representative Tim Quinn, who represents Summit County and Wasatch County, I think, and he said it's probably that domino effect that inspired Representative McKell to run this again. But, you know, he said that he went to bat for Park City on this issue last year, and that he still views this as a local control issue, although he doesn't necessarily appreciate Park City's banning of the bags. It's not something that he necessarily believes in, but he does believe in local control, so he'll be voting against this. And Alan Christensen, senator from District 19, seemed to hint at the same thing when we spoke with him last week. So, you know, we'll see what happens. This bill last year failed in like the last day of the session. It just didn't get a hearing. So we're about halfway through, and so there's a little bit of time to kind of move this along should Mike McKell have the votes for it.
Yeah, any sense about how that will do? Because I think last year it passed the House. It failed in the...
Right. I think it got stuck in the Senate on the last day of the legislative session, and that's where a lot of bills often get gummed up, especially last year because they were really trying to get the votes for the inland port bill. So I'm not entirely sure. There isn't a hearing scheduled for this bill yet, but Matt Dias was saying that he... is going to get that information out to the public because he knows that Park City is really interested in this issue. So, you know, should people be interested in attending the hearing or listening to the hearing, we can also give them that information. But maybe this week, I'm really not sure.
Okay. And again, I mean, we've talked about this before in terms of, I mean, one of the kind of the Republican strongholds is, you know, states' rights, giving local communities control until they don't want to give us control. When something, I guess, affects, in this case, their own constituents.
Yeah, we see this come up a lot at the session. And well, I guess for Representative McKell, it is a matter of protecting his constituents, and that is his primary job at the legislature. You know, he's elected to do that. So I don't really know. Alan Christensen, like we said, made that same argument about local control when he spoke with you last week. So we'll see if this has the votes.
Okay. Last week, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints came out in opposition to Senate Bill 132. This is the bill that would allow beer up to 4.8% alcohol content by weight to be sold in grocery stores compared just to the 3.2. You spoke with the sponsor of the bill. How does he think that the church's position will affect votes in the House and Senate?
So the sponsor for this bill is Senator Jerry Stevenson, and he's a Republican from Layton. And he's often the go-to guy in the legislature for alcohol legislation. So he's very familiar with the church weighing in on this issue. He said that he actually would have been shocked if they hadn't. They didn't show up at the committee hearing for this. So this was heard in a Senate committee 2 weeks ago, I think. And, you know, people showed up to testify against the bill and for the bill. The Utah Eagle Forum and the Sutherland Institute, both conservative groups, testified against the bill, kind of, you know, saying if the higher point beer is more readily available, then it will lead to more underage drinking. And then on the other hand, we had... you know, retailers and beer organizations, except for the Utah Brewers Guild. But these retailers were saying, you know, this is about consumer choice. So Jerry Stevenson says that he's not sure how the LDS Church's position will affect the votes. But he told me something kind of funny and obvious. He said the only way this doesn't pass is if there aren't enough votes in the Senate and House. So I'm not entirely sure where he thinks this bill will end up, but he says that the Senate likely will agree with him that this is a commerce bill and not an alcohol bill. So, you know, we'll see what happens. This also is scheduled for a hearing in a House committee. I'm not entirely sure when, but that's where it'll be next. It's already passed the Senate, I think. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But the majority of the Utah legislature is LDS. The Tribune came out with an analysis earlier this year saying that 87.5% of the members are LDS, and they often vote in line with the church. So, you know, we'll see if the bill has been killed or if it makes its way through the House.
So if it's killed, I mean, it's basically, I mean, the larger beer makers, they're not making 3.2% beer anymore. So, I mean, if this doesn't pass, then basically we don't see any beer in markets because there won't be any to sell.
So I was reading an op-ed. No, it was an editorial from the Deseret News team, and they made the argument that this will actually help local brewers more because, you know, they will be able to dominate the local beer market. Because local brewers do have this 3-2 beer, and you know, if you remove all the Coors Light and all of the Bud from the grocery stores, then you're left with the local beers. But you know, at the same time, the Utah Brewers Guild, which is lobbying against this bill, they think that this bill just doesn't go far enough, and you know, they would like to be able to sell the beer that's above 4.8% in the grocery store. And they think that this really just benefits retailers. So I read also that Walmart was really pushing for this bill at a larger level. So that's also a concern of the Utah Brewers Guild, is that it took these large outside influence, these retailers, these, you know, nationwide distributors of beer to make this happen. So we'll see what happens. Jerry Stevenson, as a Republican, can kind of, you know, move this along better than a Democrat would be able to. But, you know, the LDS Church's opposition certainly doesn't help it.
Okay. What else are we watching this for this week?
So we're supposed to see a sales tax bill from Representative Tim Quinn this week. This is the big one that we've been talking about, although it hasn't been numbered yet. So we'll have some more information on that hopefully later this week. Also, it was pointed out to me that the bill that Park City has been working on with Salt Lake City and Rocky Mountain Power and Summit County to encourage communities to get to 100% renewable energy by 2030. That bill has been named, and it has a sponsor. It's Representative Steve Handy, who's a Republican from Layton, and he actually involves himself in a lot of environmental sustainability-related legislation. So there's no text available for the bill yet, but it does exist. And then I just wanted to mention, Leslie, kind of interesting, because now that we're past Medicaid, of course, the governor signed that into law last week. He signed SB 96 into law. People have been focusing on the last proposition that voters approved in November, which is Prop 4, the Independent Redistricting Commission initiative. And last week, Republican leadership in the House and Senate expressed that they probably won't be taking on Prop 4 this session. It'll probably come up in the next session or perhaps in an interim session. But that's because, you know, this redistricting commission wouldn't really take effect until after the 2020 census. So there's a little more time for discussion, and we probably won't see that discussion happen this legislative session, but there are no certainties. So we'll keep an eye on that for people.
I wanted to mention though, you had mentioned Representative Tim Quinn's sales tax bill. We're talking about the tax, the new taxes on services, as we start to see that increase in terms of the number of sales. What about the bill that we had heard that might be coming in terms of where the sales happen? Right now we've got a 50-50 split between point of sale and population. This would take it away from point of sale, is what we're hearing, and redistribute the sales tax based on population. I know that was a big concern to Summit County.
Right, and Matt Dias actually mentioned this during his legislative update this week, too. So we're kind of thinking of it as these two different bills. We've got Tim Quinn's sales tax bill, and then Republican leadership is working on supposedly a larger bill that might change that redistribution. So we haven't seen either of those yet, but it is still a priority of the leadership team. I think the governor mentioned in his weekly news conference last week that he wants this to happen by the end of the 2019 legislative session. So we don't have too much time left, but we do see a lot of bills come up in the final weeks of the session. So it'll be big. It'll be the next big thing, I think, to come out of the session since we're past Medicaid at this point. But, you know, we'll see how that bill differs from Tim Quinn's bill.
Okay, Emily, enjoy the rest of your day off. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie. We'll see you later.
That's KPCW reporter Emily Means. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, a woman is in critical but stable condition after a house in Wasatch County exploded in flames Friday night. Wasatch County fire officials report that at about 7 o'clock, they received an alert that a home had exploded on Lake Pines Drive at Timber Lakes Development. That's east of Heber City. A woman and her four children had come to the cabin to spend the weekend. When they arrived, the woman entered the garage and noticed a gas smell. The children remained in the car while the woman went inside to discover the cause of the smell. Not long after, there was an explosion. Neighbors heard the explosion and saw flames coming out of the home. Two men who lived nearby rushed to the home and heard the woman calling for help. The two men went inside the burning home with no safety gear, found the woman trapped under a beam. The men were able to lift the beam off of her and take her to safety. The woman was treated at the scene but was unable to be flown by helicopter to a hospital due to the storm. She was transported to Heber Valley Hospital and later by Life Flight ground transport to Salt Lake City. She is reportedly suffering from burns and trauma from the collapse of the structure. Firefighting units arrived to find the cabin completely engulfed in flames. A winter storm with fierce winds made things more difficult for firefighters as they battled against poor road conditions and low visibility before they were able to get the flames under control. Crews remained on the scene during the night. Well, Park City Film is hosting its annual Oscar party Saturday night. In the studio with details, I have the director of Park City Film, Katie Wang. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Great
to
be here.
Yeah, so I mentioned Saturday. What time?
Saturday at 6 o'clock. We'll start off the party. It's our fifth annual fundraiser. This helps to support our free community programming. And we've got free films coming up this week for kids. We do with the library. We have our Real Community series, which is our Thursday night documentary series. And many other events and programs that we have going on. But this is really to bring our community film lovers together. We show the Oscar-nominated shorts this coming weekend ahead of the Academy Awards. And Saturday night will be the documentary shorts, which are almost always the strongest of the collection. So you can come 6 o'clock, get some great food from Done to Your Taste Catering. We'll have drinks, of course, silent auction. We've got some great donations from Wasatch Adventure Guides, a fly fishing trip, Park City Desserts has donated a gift basket, Jean Glazer animal portraits. So if you want to get a portrait of your animal, you can come bid on that and raise some money for us. And it's really just to bring our community together. What we found is that, you know, people who love film want to see films, of course. And so they can get together and get to know one another, meet some new friends, you know, have a great evening. And then at 8 o'clock, we'll start the documentary shorts. And we found that people kind of stay after the film as well, just to digest what they just saw and really unpack it. And it's, again, kind of taking that community of film to the next level.
So you showing the same films all three nights?
Nope. So we'll have the animated shorts on Friday night. We'll have the documentary shorts collection on Saturday night and then the live action collection on Sunday night. You can also just come to the documentary shorts if you're, you know, not into the party or have something else going on. You're certainly welcome at our regular ticket prices to just come on Saturday and and see the doc shorts. But of course, we'd love to have you come early. We do have tickets are $50. It includes three drink tickets and, of course, food and some Oscar trivia, some great prizes for that. But if you're a member of Park City Film, it's a $40 ticket price. So a little incentive there to become a member and support us year round. But tickets are limited. We don't have, you know, we only have so much space in that community room. So we do encourage people to go online to parkcityfilm.org and get their tickets in advance. They have been going fast. We probably have about 25, 30 left. So
okay. As you mentioned this week, you're also showing free films at 4 o'clock Tuesday through Friday.
Tuesday through Friday, yes. The library is closed today, but we'll be starting off with Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit at 4 o'clock on Tuesday. Wednesday, we have... Geez, I just blanked on the film there. I know we're doing Pele on Thursday and The Incredibles 2. Sorry, Monsters vs. Aliens is on Wednesday. But just some great films. It's really a partnership that's grown with the Park City Library to provide an entertaining and free event for children in our community to do after, you know, when the schools are out, after they've gone skiing. But it's really open to everyone of all ages. We get adults coming with and without children. So it's just kind of a fun and entertaining thing to do during the holiday break.
Okay, those again all at 4 o'clock?
Or 4 o'clock. They're all free, free popcorn. We partner with the Christian Center as well to get some healthy snacks. Not that popcorn's not healthy, but maybe a little fruit, something a little more diverse offerings there. But just a really fun way to get together. And we do this again during spring break. And then, of course, over the summer, we have our retrospective series where we do kind of a Throwback Tuesday collection of films.
Okay. And then also on Thursday with the Park City Professional Ski Patrols Association presenting a classic then. Is that part of yours?
Nope, that's different from us. Yep.
Okay.
Yep, the Jim Santee is not, we're not the sole operators of films there, so we do, it's fun to see other folks come together and program some other films. But yeah, we've got our hands full with what we've already got going on. But some great films around the Academy Awards, of course, and then after this weekend, we'll be showing some films that have been nominated and perhaps will be winners, like Vice and Capernaum, which is a foreign film from Lebanon. So, but yeah, if you go to our website, parkcityfilm.org, you can check out all of those trailers and get some tickets. SOM 3, of course, on Thursday as well, which is our benefit for National Ability Center. And tickets for that are actually almost sold out. So if you are looking for the wine and film pairing on Thursday, again, I encourage you to go online and benefit another nonprofit as well as, you know, enjoy a great film and some good wine.
Okay. Katie, anything else you want to mention?
No, just want to thank the community for their support. And we hope to see a great bunch of film lovers out on Saturday night. Party starts at 6 o'clock, films at 8.
Okay, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
That's Katie Wang with Park City Film. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.
I'm Mike Kirby with Big D Construction, celebrating another great year with KPCW. Jack Livinggood had the vision 17 years ago to create a true mountain resort division, hiring people that live, understand, and build in the community. With offices in Jackson, Bozeman, and our home office in Park City, that vision is alive today. More information at big-d.com.
Well, a couple house sitting in Pinebrook had a Valentine's Day surprise when they discovered a moose had fallen through the window well into the basement. The female moose was in the house for about an hour. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more on that.
Gabrielle Goulet says it was about 7 a.m. when they heard glass breaking in the basement.
We were just sitting at in the kitchen doing some work, and we heard glass shattering. And it was like a sound that kept going, like the glass kept shattering. And my fiance like ran down the stairs and was like, "Get out of here," thinking that it was a person breaking in. And then, we got downstairs and my fiance Tim was like, "Oh my God, there's a moose. It's falling in the basement." So we like saw essentially the butt of the moose like slowly moving into the basement.
Goulet says the window well is covered with a grate, but thinks the combined weight of the moose and all the snow may have caused it to collapse. They were worried the moose would make its way up the stairs.
It was a huge female moose. I'm sure it was very heavy, and obviously we've had a lot of snow, so I'm sure it seems the moose just didn't see it and, you know, thought it was stepping into, you know, solid ground and just fell through. And my fiance stayed in the stairs going into the basement to make sure the moose couldn't come up because it's all open, like there's no doors or anything.
Summit County Sheriff's Lieutenant Andrew Wright says once they formulated a plan, they were able to coax it out the garage door, which is on the same level as the basement.
The moose had cut itself on the broken glass window, and so there was some blood footprints throughout the carpet area of the basement. And then what I understand, the deputies and the wildlife officers started banging on some of the other intact windows in an effort to try to startle the moose to get it moving, which it worked. And the moose ran out the garage door and wandered off into the wild.
The wildlife officials, Sheriff's Office and Goulet say the moose seemed to have only superficial cuts that were not life-threatening.
Actually, they said that it looked like cuts on the ears just from falling through. And the moose, like, you know, ran out of here and it wasn't limping or anything. After it ran out, I walked up to the deck and looked out and I saw it, you know, trotting down the street away from the house.
Goulet says a disaster crew showed up quickly, cleaning up the glass and boarding up broken windows.
We'll have to obviously replace the carpet, but otherwise there really isn't much damage to the house. And I'm so thankful we were home when this happened because, one, we have two cats that we absolutely adore, and I would be so sad if they ran out. But also, you know, what would have happened if the moose was in here by itself, like running around the house? That could have been a horrible outcome.
Goulet says when she called her parents, her mother was mostly concerned about the moose and if it was hurt. Lieutenant Wright says people in Summit County love animals, wild or otherwise, and he thinks that's a good thing. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
The Utah section of the PGA has awarded Promontory's Director of Golf with a prestigious award. KPCW's David Boyle has more about that.
The Utah section of the Professional Golf Association awarded Promontory Director of Golf Ryan Karchner with the Professional of the Year Award. Finalists for the award were selected within a committee and then sent out to peers for voting. Karchner said that winning the award was an honor, especially considering those who have won the award before.
If you look at the list of the guys that have won the Professional of the Year Award, many of them are part of the Utah Golf Hall of Fame, and there's a few of them that are in the National Golf Hall of Fame. But it's unbelievable. It's kind of the highest honor they can give you from your peers. Like I said, it was just kind of a total shock to me. I put in a lot of work, and it's definitely a team award. You know, what I've done with my staff here, then also Promontory's willingness to support the growth of the game and hosting events and things that we've done here this last year.
Karchner explains why he was given the award.
They look at not just how well you do your job, but it's kind of over and beyond. I hosted some really nice junior events. One of the biggest ones was the Rolex Junior World Championship, which is the biggest tournament for girls 18 and under in the United States, and one of the biggest in the world, actually. So we had 72 of the best girl golfers in the world, again, not just nation, in the world, come and compete on our Dye Canyon course for that championship. And it was really well received and gave some really good notoriety, not just to Promontory and Utah PGA, but it was for golf in Utah. It was really, really good, and it made us really shine. They loved coming to Park City, and it really, really was a good experience for all the kids that were able to make it here.
In addition to leadership within the section, Karchner helped organize some local junior championships and the regional drive, chip, and putt competition where kids could qualify to compete in Augusta the Sunday before the Masters. In addition to his work at Promontory's two golf courses, Karchner is also the head girls golf coach at Corner Canyon High School in Draper. The Chargers have won three straight state titles. He says Promontory Golf is looking forward to another great season.
We are hosting kind of the Junior Major Championship for the Utah Section Junior Series. So we'll host kind of all the kids that have won tournaments in the summer. We'll host them again up here at Promontory on our Dye course. We have a couple other little events, and just the season at hand, you know, I work hard trying to create some other golf opportunities for my members here at Promontory, just because we are a little bit of a short season, as you know, with the snow that we have. So we do a bunch of events outside where I kind of travel with the members and try to take them places, but we're taking a handful of our members back actually to watch the Masters tournament in April. So I know I have a lot of members really looking forward to that, and so we're going to have a great time there. We're just looking forward to the upcoming season.
That's Promontory Director of Golf and winner of the Utah PGA Professional of the Year Award, Ryan Karchner. I'm David Boyle, KPCW News.
8:40 now. Good morning. On the phone with me now with an update from U.S. Ski and Snowboard, I have spokesman Tom Webb. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So let's kick off with the free ski competition with David Wise winning another one.
Yeah, David Wise, double gold medalist from the Olympic Games. Didn't quite have the world championships that he'd aimed to, but straight after he competed here in Park City, he headed up to Canada and won the free ski World Cup half pipe under the lights Saturday night. That's at the Canada Olympic Park in Calgary. I think he'd be very, very pleased with that result. But it was one of many podiums that we've had over this weekend and the last week. Moving straight on to Åre, Sweden, where the Alpine World Championships have now wrapped up. Michaela Schifrin just continues to rewrite all these amazing record books. Her fourth straight fifth Alpine World Ski Championship slalom title. She won that with a come-from-behind victory in Åre. It was an amazing result. Not just because she's now written history as the only skier ever to win four World Championship titles consecutively, but also because she managed to do this one with an incredibly heavy cold. The field had been really tightly packed until Vlova was the second-to-last runner. Third-to-last runner. She went in and dominated the field. Michaela's rival was about a second ahead of everybody else. And then Michaela went out and found another second. Even with a chest cold, she continues to do incredibly well. So she leads the World Championships with two golds, one in slalom, one in Super-G, and a bronze in giant slalom, and that fourth World Championship title. So she's just continuing to rewrite these record books. Park City's Ted Ligety was 11th in the GS. That was in the finals, just following slightly ahead of Tommy Ford in 12th. So okay result for Ted, but I think he'll be looking to finish the season strongly. And then World Championship action moves from Park City to Ouray. Next stop in World Championships is Seefeld, Austria, where our cross-country team will be kicking off their challenge there. Perfect preparation for Olympic champion Jesse Diggins, who won Saturday's FIS cross-country World Cup sprint, leading six U.S. women in the top 30. That's in Italy. Simi Hamilton finished fourth, leading four U.S. men into the top 30. So a really, really strong result for the whole team just before the cross-country folks head off to Austria and go for their own World Championship glory. So yet more podiums, another successful weekend, and I think everybody in the team, having caught their breath after the World Champs, is very, very happy.
Yeah. With the exception, though, of Michaela and Lindsay's bronze medal there at the Alpine World Championships, I mean, not really a great finish then for the rest of the team, yeah?
Well, I would disagree with that. I think, you know, when you have such superstars as Michaela and Lindsay, this is setting the tone and setting the standard for the rest of the team. That gives everybody something to look to. But I think after the Olympic Games last year, there was an awful lot of focus on what we had achieved at those games. And we have a project in place called Project 26, which has been in place now for several years. It's the result of an awful lot of hard work by some very, very talented people looking at how we can create strength in depth, looking really far ahead. So we have made a strategic decision not to focus on people who may be able to just kind of break into top 20 or top 15. We took a decision a while ago, a tough decision, that we changed qualifying criteria and then shifted our focus into the development programs and into youth with a very strong eye on 2026. So while we may not be dominating in the way that, you know, in the days of Bodie Miller and Julia Mancuso and Lindsay and Darren and those folks, we have got a very strong plan in place that's looking further ahead so that we can put building blocks in place now for those youth and give us an opportunity much longer term for us to be able to enjoy more sustained success. But I don't think anybody's going to turn down the success that Michaela is currently enjoying and obviously the legacy that Lindsay has created as well.
Oh, certainly not. Not to take anything away from them. But, I mean, watching the men's slalom yesterday, you know, where we saw the Austrians 1, 2, 3, it was like, where was Team USA in that? Nowhere.
Well, there can only be three people on any podium at any time. And I think those Austrians will be looking at what Michaela's doing and say, where was an Austrian? You know, these things are cyclical. As much as I think everybody at US Ski and Snowboard would like to be dominating in every single competition, it's just physically not possible. But as I say, we do have a very good plan in place, one that means we're investing time and money and resource into giving us a much stronger chance of being able to have more strength and depth in the future. And I think, you know, that sort of success doesn't come around overnight. But we have talented people working on a long-term plan to give us an opportunity to maybe not to have 1, 2, 3, because I think that is exceptional and maybe once in a lifetime, but certainly to have more representation near that podium, if not on it in the future.
Sure. And of course, we wrapped up the Biathlon World Cup at Soldier Hollow. This is a sport that is run separately, and I'm just kind of curious. I mean, is that just because that's the way it started, that biathlon is its own, national governing association? I mean, as opposed to bringing it under one big umbrella?
Yeah, that is right. I mean, there's in this country, there are, I think I'm right in saying, 49 national governing bodies are covering winter and summer sports. And, you know, US Ski and Snowboard, by our very definition, obviously we are ski and snowboard sports. But under that umbrella also, from our perspective, falls USA Nordic, who are a separate organization as well, but we share some responsibilities in the way that we work with the athletes in that world. But yeah, just like, we are separate from a number of other NGBs. US Biathlon has been an extremely successful organization in its own right. And I think the reports that I've heard from Soldier Hollow were really good turnout, lots of good crowds coming out to see what was going on over there. Some strong U.S. results, and I think full credit goes to Max Cobb and his team for having put on such an amazing event there, one that we stand back and applaud and support as much as we can, but not one, yeah, that we have any kind of governance role in.
Okay. Tom, anything else?
No. Have a great week, Leslie, and everybody, and speak to you next week.
That's Tom Webb with U.S. Ski and Snowboard. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio, I've got Brian Hanton with Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, let's start off with just the ROBS. We talked to you a little bit last month about that. Due to a kind of a property ownership, and I'm believing we're talking Rail Resorts. There was some confusion about who this property owner is.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Park City Mountain does own a portion of ROBS. And through some employee turnover on our side, we weren't made aware of all of that stuff. We didn't do our research well enough. We thought it was through the Sun Peak neighborhood. And once we dove in a little bit further, we recognized that it was through Vail and Park City Mountain. And with that, we have our easements with Vail from, I think it's May 15th through the end of October is where we have access on those trails. So that's where we kind of ran into the problem where we wanted to abide by our easements and didn't want to ruin, because Vail holds a bunch of easements for us. So that's why we did what we did as far as putting up signs that said trail is closed, and we put the dates up as to when it would be open.
Okay. That, of course, trail has been open for years, and I think people are wondering why now, just because is it just gotten so much more popular and Vail has noticed more people using it, and it was like, you know what, you need to enforce the easement that we have with you? Or
well, we reached out to Vail, because once we found out the situation, looking at the plat maps and all that stuff, we said we need to talk with them, and they've been very responsive, and our plan with them is to look at some alternate means down. There are some avalanche concerns up there, and so we've talked with their ski patrol and their mountain operations, and we're going to work with them over the summer and see if we can come up with some alternate means of getting down if we're allowed to go up there.
Okay, so what we've got now, I think, is just about a mile that's open, and then that's where the signs are posted?
Correct. I mean, there's some other trails that connect to it, to the Collins Trail, so there's some other options. I know it's not what people are used to, but hopefully we're able to come up with some good solutions for next year.
All right. But what we're seeing, I guess, is at least what I'm hearing, is that we've got the sign and people just walking right around it.
So yeah.
That's considered trespassing at that point.
It technically is. And I mean, just I hope those people recognize that there is a safety concern up there. And with them going through those signs, it definitely, it's like going at the ski resort and ducking under the ropes to go backcountry. They're taking their matters into their own hands in that time.
Yeah. Does Vail have safety concerns? I mean, is that part of it? Because it's not, this area isn't open for ski terrain, right?
Correct. Yeah. There are some safety concerns as once we reached out to them. I mean, being very responsive, they looked to the maps and kind of looked at the slopes, and there was some area of some spring slide potential, and that's where their concerns are. They just don't want to put people up there knowing that we're not monitoring it as far as Basin Recreation, and they as Park City, they have a lot more going on than out in their backcountry or front country, I guess, whatever you would call it there.
So whose responsibility is it to patrol?
I mean, right now it's just a closed trail. Mm-hmm. So it would be Vail's property. So if people are found on there and there are law enforcement up there, then that's that next step. But currently the trailhead is still open. Our crews will still plow that and have that access to as much as they can get. But right now, I mean, Vail's not going back there and looking at it, because we haven't really gone that far into the process of looking at that avalanche danger.
Okay. So why not just close the whole thing off?
We could definitely do that, but there's still access areas around where you could go. Our hope is that, I mean, technically that's maybe a little over a mile of trail in our whole trail network. So my hope is that people, knowing that there's some questionable areas up there, if they can find some other areas to go for now, and then with hopes that next year that will be an option again.
Okay. So again, this summer, that's what you're going to try and work on, is
correct,
another alignment that would get people from the, and then just loop back around.
Right. Yeah. We just want, I mean, we don't want to take things away from people, but right now we're doing our research, and hopefully we can create a safer environment, both in Vail's eyes and in ours, and have an enjoyable amenity for everybody.
Yeah, it's pretty steep in there in some of the areas, and so I guess that's got to be a concern too, with snow, that you could set off an avalanche.
Exactly, and especially with the snow that we've had this year. And again, they talk about the spring slide potential and knowing that it could cause some problems. And once we found out about, one, the property and then also the avalanche danger, we didn't feel safe sending people up there and saying it's okay.
Okay. In terms of the Sun Peak homeowners, they have really nothing to do with this, right? Other
Correct.
Than that their property owners like to enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely like to enjoy it. And in their development agreement, they had some obligations to meet as far as putting trails in. And that's where we kind of helped out that situation. So that's where the easement is involved with us. So our hope is that they understand the situation and have some patience with us in figuring out the options that we have.
Okay. So when do you think you'll have something ready to go?
I mean, our hope is by winter next year, we'll have some options. I mean, we had talked with Park City Mountain about maybe putting in some trail. So that would dictate, I mean, how that goes. We would have to coordinate with Sun Peak because their property comes into play as well. So if we can do that and have the manpower to put those trails in, then hopefully winter of 1920, we'll have something there for them.
Okay. Let's see. You've got February break camp happening this week. What, starting tomorrow?
Yep, starting tomorrow. So we have a couple different options. We have a day camp for 6-year to 12-year-olds. It's from 8 to 5 p.m., 8 in the morning to 5 p.m. They will start at Ecker Hill and end at the field house. They'll play games. They'll go into the pool at Ecker and bouncing back and forth to from Ecker to the pool, or I'm sorry, to the field house. They'll just a full day of activities and helps tire out the kids for those parents that need to work, or maybe those parents that might find their way up on the hill. And then there's also a mini winter break camp. This is the first time we've done this. It's for 4 to 6-year-olds, and that's from 9 to 11 a.m., and that's at the field house. So again, just games, arts and crafts, and those types of things for the kids of that age.
Okay, that information is on the line?
Yes, yep, you can find it on our website.
Okay, tell me about the community survey and facility demand study that you're doing.
So we're in the midst of a community survey. We try to do it every 5 or 6 years or so, just kind of getting a pulse of what the community is looking for. And we teamed up with Park City Recreation, or Park City Municipal, and we expect that survey to go out the end of February with hopes to have some results by April, and just asking what the community wants. Are we serving their needs? Is there anything else we can do better? And then with that, we're going to tie it into our facility demand study, first finding what the community needs and then seeing what we need to build. And hopefully with Silver Creek Village's potential building spot, we have some other HOAs that have kind of thrown out some properties to us. So hopefully we can find those ways to satisfy the community needs a little bit better.
Okay, so this survey is being sent out in the mail?
No, this one will actually be online. So we used a different company. It's called Y2 Analytics, and it's going to be an online survey. So there will be information sent out to a select number of the community. So I think they look for 10% of the community, and based on they're a lot smarter than I am at this part, and just with those results that they would get from that participation will give us a good grasp of what the community is looking for.
So is this, you have email addresses and from people who sign up with Basin Rec as well as with Parks and Municipal?
That's some of it, but they'll also reach out to the community. So there'll probably be some mailers going out telling them an email or a website to go to. So that way we're involving not just the recreation users, we're getting all of the population, because we don't want to limit just to the people that use the field house and the mark. We want all of the community that maybe doesn't participate in those, and we want to hear from them as well.
Okay, let's talk briefly about some of the projects that you've got planned for 2019. A new trailhead at the Discovery?
Yes, we're working with the Discovery project that's over behind the Wallaman School. So our plan is to put in a parking area there with hopes to alleviate some pressures in the surrounding neighborhoods, and then develop a little trail system there tying into those neighborhoods. So that's we're in the planning stages of that right now.
How big would that be? How many cars will you be able to?
We're ranging right now between 30 and 40 spots. So it's not enormous, but it hopefully will be enough to take some pressures off the neighborhoods.
Okay. And then these trails would go where? Would they just loop in the neighborhood, or would they actually connect with some of the others in Tollgate?
Right. Some of the, there would be our plan is a looped network mm-hmm. within there, but also tying into the new trail that we put in Summit Park or our Toll Canyon area. So tying that in there and allowing people to get all the way up to the Road to Waz and those types of trails.
So bike and hike then?
Trails? Yes, yeah, multi-use trails. So hike, bike, however you want to get up there.
Okay, they're also going to do some work at the Trailside Playground. What's going to happen there?
Yeah, we're actually taking out the upper Trailside Playground this year, and we're going to put in a new one. So we're going through the RFP, or the invitation to bid process right now, and then hopefully we'll have that set to our board by our March board meeting, and then moving forward and having it in midsummer.
Okay. And then finally, you've got adult leagues, so it's starting up.
Yeah, we have our 3-on-3 basketball. That's on Tuesday nights. If you're looking to play, we take free agents, or if you want to come as teams. Flag football, they play on Sundays, and we come as teams again and looking for free agents, as well as our pickleball. It seems to be the hottest sport in America. We have leagues on Sunday, and if you want to come out and learn how to play, we have clinics on Saturdays, and that information can all be found on our website.
Okay, great. We'll see you next month. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
It's Brian Hanton, the Executive Director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.